Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. This is Bob Benyard. What? They're putting babies in school books. They're putting babies in high school yearbooks. You know, you get your senior year, you leave with the yearbook, you ask all your friends to sign it, and now high schools are beginning to put the babies' pictures in the school books, in their yearbooks, the babies that are born to the students while they're students. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. I remember a Denver area high school had 108 babies born in 1 year. In fact, it was a state record. They took the title that year. It was Adams City High in Commerce City. They took the title. They beat Gateway High in Aurora. Gateway had 80. It was 108 to 80. Sounded like a football game. In fact, our monthly newsletter, The Rational Inspirer, had a picture of a pregnant cheerleader on the cover cheering for Adams City High, 108 over Gateway, 80. So we'll get to that story out of St. Petersburg. Now they're putting the kids' pictures in the high school yearbooks. But first this, hey, our phone number is 1-800-836-9278, 1-800-8-NYART. Hello to you guys out there in New York, Massachusetts, Indiana, South Bend. How's Notre Dame doing? Haven't really been paying attention to college football this year. Hey, Al Gore came out strongly today against any U.S. attack on Iraq. Al Gore is saying that this would be a dangerous course that could derail the war on terror. He said our primary focus should be winning the war against terrorism. Yeah, no kidding. And that's one of the reasons, a primary reason, that we're going to go after Saddam Hussein, who uses the money that he has access to as the tyrannical head of state of Iraq. He uses that money to subsidize terrorist acts. I mean, he openly provides, what is it now, up to $8,000 to each suicide bomber who kills himself. He gives the money to the estate. And, hey, if you're in the Middle East, that could be a lot of money, $8,000. And it wouldn't motivate a wealthy Palestinian, but a poor Palestinian who thinks, hey, I can make $8,000 in one day just by killing myself and a couple women and children. So Saddam Hussein funds that openly. He brags about it. The going rate is known. So that's just one aspect, an aspect that the media often overlooks. Oh, yeah, and if the whole world, including the UN, could be up in arms over Slobodan Milosevic a few years ago, he was guilty of genocide, and he was an international criminal that needed to be arrested and tried because of killing his own people. Well, then why doesn't that standard go for Saddam Hussein? Why isn't the UN calling for a noose to be put around Saddam Hussein's neck? He's killed his own people. He's killed his own family members. How many of his own sons-in-laws has he killed? Well, two, I think. I think two. So anyway, Al Gore, I imagine in a bid to become even less popular, is saying that we should not attack Iraq. And he said such an attack would destroy the goodwill that the United States has sought to build in the world since September 11th last year. Well, why would it destroy our goodwill if we liberate the people of Iraq? And that's something that, you know, we've asked liberals for this question repeatedly. Why is it that liberals do not want to see the people of Iraq liberated? Why is it that liberals did not want to see the people of Afghanistan liberated? Why is that? I mean, we went into Afghanistan and we liberated the people of that country from the Taliban, from a terrorist regime. And we could do the same in Iraq. We could liberate that country. And just as there were celebrations in the streets in Afghanistan, so too there will be in Baghdad when we kill Saddam Hussein. So why is it that liberals don't care if tens of millions of people, maybe they don't care because, well, you know, they live in the Middle East. And the Middle East really has an overpopulation problem anyway, liberals think. But don't they care about Iraqi people who are living in misery and millions of them in squalor because they're serving this tyrant? No free speech. No free speech in Iraq. Yeah, you'd think liberals would be against that. But apparently they're not. So anyway, we conservatives, we'd like to go in and liberate the people of Iraq like we liberated Afghanistan. It's not America's goal, and not that all of America's goals are perfect and righteous, because we could be messed up when we want to be as a nation. But if we're going to go in and liberate the people of Iraq, we're not trying to subjugate that country. We're not trying to make it a province of the United States. We're not taking their territory. Maybe, in fact, maybe now when we get footage of news out of Iraq, maybe we'll see a blade of grass one of these days and some trees. I wonder if that's included in the foreign aid. We need to send them grass seeds. That would help. All right. So, oh, and by the way, you know how the media has been beating this drum that America will have to go it alone because all the world will be against us. Obviously, Germany's been pretty outspoken against us. Germany seems a little too chummy with Iraq. Obviously, they are. But if all the world is going to be against us if we do this, well, why are some Arab countries helping us? Like Jordan and Qatar and Kuwait and Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, even talking about, hey, well, perhaps we could use their air bases after all. I thought they'd all be against this. Wasn't it the head of the Arab League a few weeks ago who said that if we attack Iraq, that will open the gates of hell in the Middle East? Huh. They were open a long time ago. Listener-supported radio right here, Bob and Yurt Live, airing in Rochester, New York, Springfield, Mass., South Bend, Indiana, Denver, Colorado, Indianapolis, and on the web via kgov.com, where you could tune in anytime, 24 hours a day, get the show, get the archives, and also you could take a link to some of our favorite sites, where we have forums. Thousands, tens of thousands of posts on the forums that people gather to talk about the issues we talk about on the show. Tens of thousands of posts, hundreds of thousands of posts. It's fun. So anyway, if you enjoy the show, why don't you give us a call? Now, our call in line to be on the air is 1-800-8-NYART, but the materials, if you'd like to check out some of our videos, audio tape albums, literature, that's 1-888-8-NYART, 1-888-836-9278. Some of the videos that you might enjoy are, one, Bob debates an ACLU lawyer. Actually, it was the executive director of the Colorado ACLU. We were on public TV here in Denver, and we had an interesting debate, Jim Joy and I, and we've got the video. I think you'll like it. You know how you figure out who wins a debate? Well, who won the debate? Whoever sells the tape. Whoever sells the tape won the debate. Same thing with the evolutionist I debated, Dr. Eugenie Scott, right after she was on a national debate on PBS nationwide. She was on Bob and Eric Live. You want to hear a debate with an evolutionist? Call us up and order it. And we've got more videos, but I want to save those. No, I'll tell you about a couple more videos here. Confronting an atheist. Now, that is a fun video because we had a caller. He's an atheist. And almost confronting is maybe the wrong word because he was very willing to talk and to consider the evidence. And in the middle of that video, about an hour-long video or so, in the middle of it, we put a skit that we made on the Bob and Yurt Live TV show about 10 years ago. And the skit is a science teacher who stands before God on Judgment Day. And God asks him why and gives him examples of how he distorted science and the truth to lead people astray. Yeah, the Secretary General of the Arab League said that if we attacked Iraq, it would open the gates of hell in the Middle East. They've been open for so long, who would know the difference? Who would know the difference? So anyway, now a slowly growing number of Arab countries are cooperating with America publicly. And of course, we don't know which ones may be doing so privately. Let's go to the phones. Let's see, we've got Denver and we've got South Bend. We'll get both. Let's go to Denver first. Dave, speak your mind.
Yeah, hi there.
Howdy.
I believe that there's ample evidence that Iraq was behind both of the World Trade Center bombings. Ramzi Youssef, the mastermind of the first bombing in 1993, was an Iraqi agent. He had an Iraqi passport. This could be corroborated on frontline specials. If you do like a
Dave, Condi Rice, she pointed out just this past week that we have very specific information tying Iraq to terrorism and even to Al Qaeda, with Al Qaeda agents in Baghdad. When we know some specifics about who was there and when they were there. And so obviously Iraq is supportive of terrorists, primarily if terrorist groups that hate the Jews, they would be number one on Iraq's list. And secondly, if they hate America.
Well, you know, Mohammed Atta met with an Iraqi agent in Prague to blow up Radio Free Europe.
Well, now that's been reported widely. But our government, for some reason, tends to back off of that, suggesting
the World Trade Center bombing first time. There was another person who was supposedly indicted, but they never caught him. Mm-hmm. And Iraq said that they put him in jail, but you know, that's for us to find out. He's probably not in jail. Well, isn't it funny that one of the most wanted terrorists was found dead in his apartment in Baghdad, and supposedly he was Iraq said that he committed suicide. But
right, absolutely,
he had multiple gunshot wounds.
Yeah, very good point. And yeah, so there's a lot of evidence that Saddam Hussein is guilty of association and promotion of terrorism. But it's like the same thing with Yasser Arafat. You know, much of the world, the media, mostly liberals, denied, you know, they went kicking and screaming before they were finally willing to admit that Yasser Arafat is a terrorist, because when the IDF, when the Jews got to comb through his compound in Ramallah, we found the receipts that he was paying for the suicide bombs. He was buying the bombs that the terrorists were using to kill innocent people,
while he
was publicly condemning it. And that's the scam about the current Palestinian situation. Palestinian leaders will come here like Arafat's one-time spokesman who spoke recently in Colorado Springs and up in CU in Boulder just a week ago or so. And she said, of course I condemn terrorist attacks. That's bogus. They've been saying that for 20 years out of one side of their mouth. And out of the other side, they're encouraging. In fact, Yasser Arafat not too long ago on Arab television called for 1 million terrorists to march on Jerusalem.
Well, some of the suicide bombers are from Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, which is the military wing of Arafat.
Fatah, exactly. All right. So, hey, Dave, thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Appreciate your call. 1-800-836-9278. In South Bend, we'll speak your mind.
Change tracks on you.
Yeah, that's fine.
There was, did you see the woman that beat up her daughter?
I saw some of that footage, and we talked about it on Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And on Friday night, I made a prediction.
What's that?
You could let us know if you know how the prediction came out. I predicted that while the woman was totally out of control, that most likely that the child was not injured.
Mm-hmm.
And so have you heard any update on that score of the child who now she's been looked at by a doctor?
I haven't heard anything about that.
Okay, I heard on, I think it was NPR, National Public Radio.
A good source.
And the doctor who gave her an examination said that she was unharmed, unhurt. And that was the prediction that I made Friday night on the air.
Right.
And pointed out that, you know, this woman was out of control, totally out of control. But the fact that so many people were calling for this babe, for this 4-year-old child to be taken out of her home when there wasn't even yet any, we didn't even know if the girl was injured. Yeah, the mother was out of control, but you might be out of control and not injure your child. And I said, she's not going to have any broken teeth, no broken nose, no swollen black eyes. She'll have no lacerated skin on her face from knuckles grinding through to her cheekbones. And that was the prediction. And I'm thankful for the sake of the girl and the mother and the family that, of course, the girl was not injured.
Let me ask you this, Bob. What do you think should be done as a punishment for the mother?
Well, if the girl was not injured,
right,
then the mother should be told that she needs to control her anger and learn how to properly discipline her daughter. That's what should happen to the mother. If the mother injured her daughter, if she burned her with matches or cut her or broke her bones,
right,
then the mother should be punished far more severely than our liberal government ever would.
You mean like flogged or something like that?
Yeah, some kind of serious punishment. And serious consequence, not 12 weeks of parenting classes and 2 days of watching cable TV in the county jail.
I'm just waiting for them to find a way to blame the father for all this. Try to pin the blame on the father.
Yeah, that could be. That could be. We had a caller Friday night. Will, you obviously didn't hear it. And he said he had worked with troubled teens in, where did this happen? Mishawaka, right?
Right.
Yeah, he had said he worked with troubled teens somewhere there in northern Indiana for about a year just recently. And he said a good percentage of them were kids who were taken out of their homes and put in the system, put in foster care families.
Right.
And they really got messed up in the foster care families with not only physical but sexual abuse.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Right. And, of course, that problem is epidemic. But the media will just go hog wild over a girl. If that mother had spanked her daughter perfectly correctly,
right,
the media would have done the same thing that they did. If they caught a spanking on video and it was a perfectly controlled and appropriate spanking, they would have done the same thing to demonize that mother. That mother was out of control, undoubtedly.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
When you were talking about the Arabs and the Israelis and all this stuff with Iraq.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a friend of mine who was who's in the know, or at least he understands how some of this military stuff goes on.
Yeah.
And he said that part of the reason he made a prediction that, and this was about 6 months ago, that all this stuff would start happening around fall, is he said part of the reason why we didn't do anything about Iraq before was because if we were going to attack Iraq, we needed cruise missiles and stuff like that.
Right.
And all the cruise missiles...
We were depleted.
Yeah, because Bill Clinton, every time he did something, he needed to shoot something at a foreign country.
You mean if Monica Lewinsky was going to be on TV that night?
Yeah.
He would launch a few cruise missiles?
Yes.
At a milk factory, something like that?
Yeah.
So that Hollywood, even though they love Bill Clinton, they create the movie Wag the Dog?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, our enemies in the world, they got that movie and they watched it in presidential palaces around the world. And they believed that the Monica Lewinsky scandal was a major reason why Bill Clinton launched those attacks on, what, the Sudan?
Uh-huh.
In Libya and Afghanistan, was it? And
yeah.
And Bill Clinton said, this is our first, you know, like, we're now going to have a war against these international criminals. Well, that war ended the moment it started. In fact, I think it was the night that his deposition in the Monica Lewinsky scandal was airing on TV.
Right.
I think, if I recall, that's the night he sent those cruise missiles out. And we didn't do a single thing after that. That was it. That was done to steal ratings away from his own sex scandal, and he's willing to kill people for political gain, to use the military as a pawn for political gain. And with all that, the liberals who supposedly care about you know, America mistreating foreigners, they praise the guy.
How do you think Osama bin Laden felt about all this?
There is no question that what Bill Clinton did regarding covering up, attempting to distract from the Monica Lewinsky scandal by killing a few Arab people, maybe in a milk factory, maybe just some wildly targeted attacks. It's no question that emboldened them and their self of righteousness, that they really were on the right, because America obviously was so evil that our sexual immorality would be accepted to the point where the president could kill people using the military to cover up his an affair. And you know what, Will, was interesting?
Go ahead.
The media in this country, when they covered that story, you know where they were? The media that follows the president around the country? I remember where they were when Clinton bombed the Sudan.
Where?
They were in a theater in Martha's Vineyard watching Wag the Dog. And
that's
they came out. This is the White House press corps that follows Bill Clinton. And they all, their beepers went off during the movie. And they all came out and called their editors. And they were just, they thought they had fallen into the movie. It was surreal that Bill Clinton, and the night of this deposition airing, is started to bomb some countries that nobody's ever heard of.
So would you say that may have played a role in inciting them to attack us?
There's no question that it added to their sense of self-righteousness. There's no question. And a very brilliant analysis, Will. Thank you so much. Hey, Bob Inyard here. We had somebody call up today, somebody that was on the monthly Bible study, and he said, I want to switch to the monthly albums. And you could do that if you're early on. And if you've been with the monthly Bible studies for a long time, you can't do that, because the tapes we give out for the monthly Bible studies, they're the same tapes that are in the albums. Unless, of course, now you want a second set to share with your church library or friends. And the monthly albums, it's $34.95 a month. If you have a credit card, you call us up, 1-888-836-9278. and you set up with your credit card, your address, and every month, about the middle of the month, we mail you an album. If you're on the monthly Bible study or if you're interested in that, it's a little less expensive. It's four tapes a month, and it's $24.95. And you don't get the album cover. You know, a tape album where it looks like the shape of a hard-covered book, but it's plastic, and you open it up, and there are tapes in it. That's our monthly albums. And the albums are fun because on the front cover, the back cover, we describe what exactly it is that we're going to talk about in that album, like the Predestination and Free Will album. Boy, is that a fun album. That is just so much fun, that topic. And what we do is we ask questions on the album cover, like, will there be time in heaven? Will there be time in heaven? Was time created? Or did time always exist? And does God operate in time or outside of time? For example, on the seventh day, who rested? Was it the creation that rested or God that rested? Which was it? On the seventh day, the Lord rested from his creative labors. And so was it the creation that rested? I don't think so. It sounds like it was God that rested. But if God is outside of time, so that there couldn't be a time before or after for God, then how could he have created and then rested? Isn't that an interesting question? Well, it turns out that the Bible has hundreds of issues like that that we can look at and analyze and learn a lot about God, time, and reality. We're back. Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-N-YART, 1-800-836-9278. Hey, the NASDAQ closed at a six-year low. Didn't European stocks do the same? I think they hit a five-year low. And Japan, well, let's not even mention Japan. No need even to mention Japan. Japan is just in a free fall. And their central bank, they figured this is liberal economics. The central bank in Japan, they're supposed to be the foundation of the economy, certainly of the banking system. And they thought, you know, our member banks are in trouble because they have all this bad stock. They were heavily invested in the Japanese stock market, and it fell apart 20 years ago, and it's not come close back. Things don't always recover. So anyway, the central bank thought, well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to buy all this bad stock for a good price from all these banks. We're going to give them some real cash for all this. It's not bad debt, bad loans. It's just bad investments. So we, being the foundation of the system, we're going to take all that financial rot and we're going to put it into our vault. Now, how is that going to make things better? How's that going to make things better? That's like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. It sounds like a recipe for disaster in Japan. So now the central bank is determined to become insolvent, to take on bad investments. So with all the financial woes around the country and the world, it's a hard time for some, but it's also a time of opportunity. And let me just say a word of encouragement for those of you out there who are in the business world and trying to get into business ventures and trying to move ahead. And now look at this. Everything is falling apart. Capital's drying up. Well, you know what? It's never a bad time for a good opportunity. Never. And if the markets are drying up and investors are scared, they don't know where to put their money. What, are they going to put it in stocks? They're still going down. going to put it in real estate? If the market goes down, real estate's likely to follow. What are they going to buy, gold? Well, yeah, maybe that might be their best bet. But anyway, investors with large amounts of money, they don't know where to put the money right now. And if you've got a brilliant business opportunity, this could be the time of opportunity. The time of opportunity right now. Hey, all right, let's go to the story out of St. Petersburg. Actually, it's out of Pinellas Park, Florida, in the St. Petersburg Times. I'll give you our phone number. This is where the yearbooks, high school yearbooks, are adding pictures of the babies born to the students in the yearbooks. There's no longer any shame. And so now the kids, they have nurseries in the schools. But our phone number, 1-800-8-N-YARDS, 1-800-836-9278. Should there be shame if a high school girl, unmarried, high school-aged girl, gets pregnant, has a baby? Should there be shame in that? Should there be shame? It used to be that there was a stigma against that. And the child was called illegitimate. So should there be shame when a teenager, unmarried teenager, becomes pregnant? Our phone number, 1-800-836-9278. All right, so this out of Pinellas Park, they've got student portraits, memorable moments throughout this high school yearbook. And it turns out they also have pictures of, well, the babies. They got hallway breakdancing in the girls' softball team. And, you know, the necessary explosion in the chemistry class. And then on page 12, there's this quote, "I just can't believe that I'm having a baby." And they have a four-page spread on the teens who are pregnant in the school. And they've got a photo of a sonogram of one of the pregnant girls, right? An ultrasound photo. That ultrasound, that stuff is really getting great. Man, did you see GE's new 3D, their 3D ultrasound? It's just awesome. It looks like you're looking at the baby, not in the womb. It's so awesome what the baby looks like. You can tell if he looks like mom or dad. Let's go to the phones in New York, 1-800-836-9278. Rochester, New York. Ira, speak your mind.
Hello, Mr. Inyard.
Howdy, sir.
Okay. I said this to you once before, but only in America can someone from New York talk to somebody from Denver who both used to live in New Jersey.
Ah, you're right. I like it.
I got to tell you something. This goes back to Bergen County, New Jersey. I was in the Bergen Mall.
Bergen Mall. I know that place.
And that was before there were other malls, and before Paramus became the mall capital of the world. There was only one mall, the Bergen Mall.
Yeah.
Goes back to the late 50s. That's as far as I'm going, as far as my age.
All right. I'm with you. I don't have a good recollection back then, but I was alive in the late 50s.
Talking about the lady who was what she did with her kid in the car there. I remember my mom used to take her hand when I acted up in Stern's department store.
Stern's!
And she would give a slap for every vowel. You should never, ever do this again.
Hey, Ira, did she ever hit you in Two Guys?
Yes, in Hackensack.
Yeah.
And Harrison, Two Guys from Harrison.
Hey, Ira, you're right. I mean, we were spanked.
Sure.
My dad spanked me growing up.
Uh-huh.
I know that his mom, my grandmother, spanked him.
Sure. So I got one question for you.
Yeah.
Anybody know any good lawyers?
Hey,
I see a lawsuit coming up here now.
Hey, Ira.
Yes, sir.
When I hear, if I'm in the locker room at the Y.
Yeah.
You know, I go there and work out now and then. Mostly play tennis, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But when I work out at the Y, a bunch of guys in the locker room and talking. And sometimes just to gauge the, you know, public perception, I'll bring up the issue of spanking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll ask him, have you ever been spanked by your dad when you were young?
Mm-hmm.
Invariably, guys tell the story of the worst spanking they ever got. and they recount it as though it were a cherished memory.
Yeah, you got
it's one of the favorite things they remember from childhood, that their dad really set them on the right path, finally, when he got the whooping of his life.
Oh, no, this was my mom. Forget my dad.
Yeah.
You will never. I mean. That's it.
That's funny, Ira. Thank you, Ira.
Well, my pleasure. God bless you.
Appreciate the call. God bless you, too. 1-800-836-9278. You will never do that again. Yeah. Hey, we've spent a month talking about how to raise kids at our church. One of the families in the church, Denver Bible Church, has been teaching the Sunday school. Man, it's been great. Learning when do you spank, when do you not spank, how do you spank. It's pretty cool. Totally, totally cool. All right, so you think the girls who are pregnant in Pinellas Park, Florida, whose pictures and their baby's pictures and their ultrasound photos are in this 4-page spread on the school yearbook, do you think those girls came from families that believed in spanking or families that believed in timeout? What do you think? My guess is that it was families that believe in timeout. All right. Now, I've got an email here, an instant message that I'm thinking, instant messages, by the way, this is at KGov, K-G-O-V, KGov Live at AOL.com. Instant messages should be maybe 2 words. Or 8 words, or 12 words. You know, preferably two. Two words is excellent. But here's one that's a few paragraphs. And usually we just dismiss them. But it caught my eye. So I want to check this out here. Let's see. Okay. The mother, this is from Electron Repair. To KGov Live at AOL.com, instant message. The mother was out of control. It was by the grace of God that the little girl was not injured. Huh. Now, if you say that, now, I know this audience, and I know that a lot of people in the audience would say that. But if you say that it was by the grace of God that this girl was injured, was not injured, well, then does that mean that every little kid who is injured, it was by the desire of God? You got to realize when you say the one, you're also saying the other. You got to think through that. Think it through first. Hey, live commercial break. When we get back to the show, we'll go to South Bend, Indiana, where Jeff's on hold saying you shouldn't shame the students when they become pregnant. We'll talk to Jeff momentarily. But right now, I want to tell you about these albums we've got. If you sign up for the monthly albums, we've got Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy's fun. Deuteronomy is just a flat-out fun book. And then, you know, Jonah and Nahum, those two prophets, they lived about 100 years apart, and they both prophesied about Nineveh. Jonah prophesied about Nineveh, and Nineveh was spared because they repented. Nahum prophesied about Nineveh, and Nineveh was a great city. It's been excavated, big-time excavation. You know, liberals used to think, oh, the Bible's wrong on that, too. There is no such city as Nineveh. Huh! Not until they excavated it this past century. Oh, boy, did they excavate it, too. What a huge and fascinating complex of cities. Well, at any rate, Nineveh went from the capital of the mightiest, powerful empire to a wind-swept desert overnight. So much so that that Alexander the Great passed by the very site of Nineveh within what period of time? I got to remember now. Alexander the Great, around 330 BC, something like that, 300 BC. And Nineveh destroyed somewhere around 450, 500 BC. So Alexander the Great goes by maybe 100 years later or so, and practically right over top the city, and didn't even know it was there because it was just buried in dust and sand. It had been decimated, as the prophet Nahum had predicted. So Jonah and Nahum, both those prophets we talk about in a single album. And then we've got Samuel. Now, Samuel's a much longer book than the two minor prophets we just mentioned. So Samuel, we have divided into two albums. First Samuel, Eli and Saul, and First Samuel, King David. Eli and Saul, right? That's the beginning of First Samuel. Eli the prophet, and then Saul the first king, and David the second king, who should have been the first king, really. What happened to Solomon? Ah, he's 2 Samuel. one 800 8 NYART. So in Pinellas Park, Florida, they have the yearbook, and they're putting pictures of the pregnant moms, the babies, the ultrasounds. In Commerce City, Colorado, they put a nursery into the school. They had 108 babies born in 1 year. Let's go to South Bend, Indiana. Jeff, speak your mind. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing well, sir.
Yeah, I disagree with you on the subject that we should shame them. I don't think we should shame them. First of all, I don't agree that they're getting pregnant at such a young age. I don't think it's a good idea, and we have to teach against that.
Right, of
but
course. Of course it's
bad.
To have
them shamed, you know, I think that would, more would look to have abortions instead of trying to bring their kid up in a right way. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, that could happen. But on the other hand, Jeff, now to me, what you just brought up is a tactical consideration versus a moral consideration.
Right.
In tactical considerations, you got to be careful with them because, one, it's easy to miscalculate the impact some strategy might have. And two, of course, tactics always should take a backseat to morals.
So tactics is what you're saying is,
well, you,
being a tactical decision is making it as, you know, as it comes to you, as how the days are now.
Well, tactics like, let's say you obviously are against abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And so the means that you use to further your goal of opposing abortion, they are your tactics.
Right.
And so you can look at this and say, well, you know, if we stigmatize women, young women who get pregnant out of wedlock, some of them will be more inclined to have an abortion to avoid the stigma.
Right. And I think that's just one thing.
Okay, let's talk through that one thing first.
Okay.
And so therefore, maybe we shouldn't have the same kind of stigma that, for example, the Bible has against women who are sexually active outside of marriage.
Okay.
Maybe we shouldn't use that kind of stigma because of our tactical concern. But let me give you another perspective on that.
Okay.
When there is no stigma against sexually active unmarried women, then not a few, but millions of those women become sexually active, and they therefore, by the laws of nature, become pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have hundreds of thousands of abortions a year, more than you would have if there were a stigma against women being sexually active and becoming pregnant before they get married. When the stigma is gone, when the peer pressure is taken away against women having sex outside of marriage, then you will have hundreds of thousands or a million or more unwed women getting pregnant every year because the stigma is not there anymore. And then you will have hundreds of thousands or a million or more having abortions every year. So I think that your tactical consideration is off.
Okay. I see your point on that, Bob.
I appreciate that.
But my other point that I wanted to bring up is, you know, if you kind of, you know, lean into them with the stigma, you know, it kind of tends to, if they're having a kid already, I see, you know, if the stigma is there, they might not have the kid in the first place. But if they did, they might feel, it might, kind of hinder them in the way they bring up their kid. You know, the kid might have the stigma around them.
The kid should have a stigma.
Really? You think so?
Yeah, because if the women, the way God made women, that their greatest concern in the world is for their children. And if there, when there was a strong stigma against an illegitimate child, women were their own first line of defense against men using them sexually, and women did not become pregnant outside of marriage in epidemic numbers.
Okay.
There weren't a million unwed teens giving birth every year. And so that stigma caused women to think, I want my child to be legitimate. I don't want to bring a child into the world outside of wedlock. I want a father for my child. That stigma taught countless women to do the right thing. When you remove the stigma, you don't realize, but you're opening the gates of misery for millions of babies who will be born out of wedlock.
Okay. That's a very good point.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate your call.
Yep.
God bless you. Hey, and that's – I'm Bob and you're live. What we wish – you know, there are ratings – for talk show hosts, like Rush Limbaugh gets 22 million listeners a week. And Larry King, what does he get? About 1 million, something like that. But anyway, we wish there were ratings for callers who were persuaded on the air to rethink their position or to concede. That would be a fun rating. Somebody out there should do that research. Take a month's worth of a handful of shows. Go to South Bend, Indiana. Jerry, speak your mind.
Hello, Bob.
Howdy,
I've
sir.
Just listened to your program tonight, and I've heard other times you spoke on the same subject.
Yeah.
And it seems like I never hear you talk about the guys, the fathers.
Yeah, because
you're always stigmatizing the women.
Yes, you're right, Jerry. I do.
I agree, but I think
let
the
me
fathers
tell you
should
why.
Be in there, too.
Let me tell you why I do that. Because the other way would not work. My goal is to be effective and to save young people from ruining their lives by having sex outside of marriage.
Okay.
There is no stigma that will work against the young man. A young man will take sex over everyone thinking that he's a what? What kind of word, what kind of derogatory word is there for a guy who has sex with a lot of women? What do we call him, a stud? That's
right,
a compliment.
Sure.
But the English language has a lot of words for women who sleep around.
Uh-huh.
And those words really are cutting, like whore,
right,
or slut, or
right.
I don't even want to mention it. There are a lot of them. And the Bible uses some of these terms.
I agree with you 100%.
And so the way God made women, women are very susceptible to peer pressure regarding sexual immorality. Because God made women with this deep-seated desire to have sex within a committed relationship. But he didn't make men that way. Men, they don't need love. All they need is a place.
So you're saying there's no way to reach the men?
No, you reach the men differently.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I never hear you try to reach the men.
Well, that's not true.
I didn't say you never did it.
Right,
I never heard it.
Well, you didn't realize you were hearing it. If you teach the young women in a community not to respect themselves and not to allow men to use them, you are at the same time teaching men that those who do sleep with those women are using them, and you're making it much more difficult for the men to take advantage of women who've now been trained to respect themselves. So, Jerry, take a stab at this. Why do you think God made men and women with such different sex drives? Why did he give women a much more reserved drive?
So they counterbalance each other, I suppose.
Exactly. And the balance is for this reason. If God made men with their intense sex drive to ensure that sex would happen and that the human race would grow and multiply. He made women with their more reserved sex drive to make sure that sex would happen in the context of a committed relationship. And so the two together is perfect. That's why with homosexuality, you break that balance. And so male homosexuals tend to have anonymous sex with hundreds of people throughout their life. That doesn't happen with lesbians because they have a different kind of sex drive that God created men and women with. And so when you take the male or the female out of the equation, you have real dysfunctionality. So anyway, Jerry, the way we get at the men is to remind women that they need to be their own first line of defense. And then the men are going to have a much harder time. That's why when a young girl goes to college, her professors try to make her into a liberal so they can have sex with her. Because if she's a conservative Christian, they're not going to get anything. But if the professor and if the seniors and if the frat guys could turn the young, virtuous women, if there are any left, into liberals, then they could get what they want and use the girls and then send them with $500 to an abortion mill to get cleaned out so the next guy could use them. Right. Hey, thank you, Jerry. Mm-hmm. Okay. Appreciate your call. 1-800-8-NYART. 1-800-836-9278. Why is it that our vocabulary, we don't have words that are cutting and hurtful toward men who sleep around? Why is it that, you know, language is language and it evolves? Why don't we have words like those words I mentioned earlier that apply to men? Well, let me give you an example. If you went into a bar and there were 20 people at the bar, 10 men and 10 women, and you said, I want everybody here to know that in the past month, and you pointed to one woman, and you said, that woman has been with every man in this bar. How would the other women at the bar feel? How would they empathize with that woman that you pointed out? They would feel bad for her. She would feel, I mean, she might defend herself, but she would feel ashamed. But what if you went into the bar and you said the same thing about one of the guys? You said, in the last month, that guy has been with every woman in this bar. The other guys would erupt into spontaneous applause. They would cheer. He would feel like he'd start flexing his muscles, like he was a hero. Let's go to Gary, Indiana. Jeff, speak your mind.
Yeah, I'm not going to totally disagree with you on what you just said, but there may be some words for a man that is sleazy. I don't think you're saying also that you don't maybe your main line of defense is what you're saying is to get to the men is through the women,
right. But
that doesn't mean through the preaching and so on and so forth place in a church.
The 17-year-old boy is not going to be the first line of defense
right. For
protecting 15-year-old girls. The first line of defense has to be the girls, right?
You could argue that, yeah.
Well, what's the first line of defense if it's not the girls being taught to respect themselves?
Well, you could say the first line of defense is that and through the preaching of the word.
Well, that's what you get from the preaching of the word. I mean, what does the Bible say about women?
The whole counsel of God, though. The whole counsel of God would include...
Would include women who are whores.
And godly men, fathers and mothers teaching their young men.
Well, of course. Yeah, Jeff, and that goes without saying.
Right.
And you could hear that on every other Christian radio station every other hour.
Right.
But what Christian shows do you hear saying that there should be a stigma against young women who sleep around?
Right.
Because God gives a stigma to those women, and who are we to take it off?
Correct.
Thank you, Jeff.
But whoremonger is a word for a man.
You're right, but it's a compliment. This is Bob and Yert reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.